Hey, I'll Scott Horton here to talk to you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In the book, Swanson explains what the revolution was, the rise of empire, and the permanent military economy, and all from a free market libertarian perspective. Jacob Hornberger, founder and president of the Future Freedom Foundation, says the book is absolutely awesome, and that Swanson's perspectives on the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis are among the best I've read. The poll numbers say that people agree on one thing, it's that America is on the wrong track. In The War State, Swanson gets to the bottom of what's ailing our society. Empire, the permanent national security bureaucracy that runs it, and the mountain of debt that has enabled our descent down this dark road. The War State could well be the book that finally brings this reality to the level of mainstream consensus. America can be saved from its government and its arms dealers. First, get the facts. Get The War State by Michael Swanson, available at your local bookseller and at Amazon.com. Or just click on the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is the Scott Horton Show. I'm going to go ahead and lie, but it's only about by three or four now. Maybe three. We got 3,000 interviews at scotthorton.org. It's actually 2,997 or something like that after this one. But anyway, I'm going to round up because, you know, once you get to five, then you can round up. I learned that in the first grade there, government school. 3,000 interviews at scotthorton.org. And also you can join up the chat room there, hang out during the show, and check out the stress blog. I'm trying to start writing things on it again a little bit. And, of course, you can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show. So, scotthorton.org and /Scott Horton Show. That's what you need to know there. Okay, so, next up is our friend MJ Rosenberg. He writes at mjrosenberg.com, and you gotta spell out J, like Homer J. Simpson, mjrosenberg.com. And, actually, my man, do you actually own the URL M letter J Rosenberg 2 and have it forwarding on? I should test that.
No, no. Somebody else has that. Doesn't.
Oh no! It. Someone else has that. That's terrible.
Someone just has it and never has used it.
Oh man. So, well, that's
too
bad.
I'm stuck with that J A Y. But what can you do?
Yeah, no, it's all right. You know, some other guy's got scotthorton.com. He's a newspaper man in Oklahoma. Nice guy. But he's owned scotthorton.com since 1994 or something. He's never given it up.
Can't complain about that too much.
Yep. I should just thank my lucky stars I got .org. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Yep. All right. So, listen, you write great things. The one I'm looking at is called The Lobby Sets Out to Defeat Obama on Iran. And I was thinking, you know, really, a good way to set this up would be to allow you to give a little bit of friendly advice to AIPAC about whether they're really blowing it here and jumping their shark and overdoing it and flying too close to the sun and making a terrible mistake that might cost them their future power and influence on other issues.
Well, that is so I should give friendly advice. That is almost impossible for me to give because I'm an unfriendly, but I can tell you what I originally thought they would do. I thought the obvious thing they would do after that phone call between President Obama and President Rouhani was that they would simply claim victory, that both Netanyahu and the lobby would just say, well, the sanctions that we wrote, and remember AIPAC wrote them, I mean Congress passed them, but AIPAC wrote them, the sanctions that we wrote did the job. The Iranians are surrendering. They're basically going to agree to our terms. This isn't necessarily true, but they're going to agree to our terms on the nuke stuff. And therefore, this is a great day for everybody. Great day for Iran, but most of all, great day for Israel. Great day for the United States. This is great. And because that's what you do if you're an if you're a smart organization or a smart government or anything, you're much better off claiming victory, especially when a few weeks ago AIPAC was widely and correctly seen as being defeated in their efforts to get that bombing of Syria. So I was sure they were going to do that. I said that to my wife, and I said, oh, they're definitely going to just, I mean, they'll finesse this. They can figure this out. And she said, are you crazy? Netanyahu won't let them do that. It's Netanyahu really is incapable of doing that for a number of reasons, including the fact that, one, he is insanely devoted to the idea of defeating Iran militarily, and also because he's got all these right-wingers who would never, you know, fellow or further right-wingers who would never let him do it. Mm-hmm. So instead of them doing the thing that would save AIPAC and preserve its role as the most dominant lobby in America, they are instead going to fight Obama. And I think it will start with the Netanyahu UN speech. Sometimes I say Israel. Sometimes I say Netanyahu. Sometimes I say AIPAC. But doesn't matter. It's all the same.
It all just means those who run the Israeli state.
Yeah, exactly. And try to run this one.
Yeah. Well, why throw in try? I mean, come on.
Yeah, why try? Right.
All right. Well, now, so they're going to be fighting alone on this, right? Or with Lindsey Graham. But is anyone, I mean, it seems like, well, maybe I'm just wishful thinking. I'm having such a good time with the Iranians and Americans talking at the level they're talking at this point. I'm a little bit giddy, but I sort of think that maybe this means that some significant parts of the American establishment, if not at AIPAC, have decided that let's go ahead and put this thing to bed. We can deal with these guys. And it's so obvious that Rouhani really means it, at least for now, and he has the backing of the Supreme Leader, at least for now, to really make a deal.
I mean,
am I right about that? Is it AIPAC versus everybody on this?
Yeah, it is. But it's not. Well, there are also the regular old hawk right wingers who like war in general. I mean, the people who in general like to resolve all international problems by killing people. It's not limited to the Israel lobby. There are lots of just, you know, free floating right wingers. If you can read them in the media, I can usually tell by reading them whether their main concern is Israel or just the fact that they like to kill, you know, innocent people on the ground. But there's more. It's more than that. I mean, for instance, the Republican right. The Democrats who are hawkish on these issues are entirely driven by AIPAC because it goes against, in general, it goes against the general worldview that they apply to everything else, which is it's better to negotiate at least first before you start going to war. But the Republicans, they don't need AIPAC to tell them that they want to kill Muslims. They're driven by all kinds of other things, including the Christian need that, you know, they're Christian, appeasing their Christians, or not just appeasing them, actually they are. I mean, they're into civilizational war with the Muslims. But in general, the fact is the one poll I've seen so far shows that 75% of the American public welcome this talking to Iran. So if that's true, and the same kind of 75% was opposed to bombing Syria, it really does indicate that there might be some kind of a shift within the thinking of the American people that makes it impossible for AIPAC to put over another war the way they have in the past. And, I mentioned, I think, to you last time that, Congressman Grayson, Alan Grayson, who was the leading opponent of bombing Syria and is totally an AIPAC guy, was asked, well, is AIPAC losing this? And he said, well, AIPAC can't win when the American people speak in one voice. And I'm as giddy as you are. I really am. I'm just trying not to be because it's unprofessional.
Yeah, exactly. We've got some cynicism to maintain here. And you know what? I have no belief in Barack Obama at all. It's simply a matter of mathematics on a page, just like Ludwig von Mises says. It's simply a calculation for him in terms of measuring the power of the Democratic Party and its allies in Washington, D.C. You know, that's all he cares about. And so it does have to be just like that. You know, the American people versus AIPAC, and the line's that clear where even Grayson has to do the right thing would be how I would put it. But, you know,
but the only thing is, the thing you have to worry about, though, is it only happened on Friday. What happens if the, I don't know who's the head of the the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has the wonderful name of Steve Israel, which I think is the best name ever for someone whose sole job is raising money for the Democratic, Democratic Party House elections.
You're such an anti-Semite, dude.
Right. I'm an observant Jew, not even the washed-out assimilationist kind. But anyway, when Steve Israel comes to Obama and he comes in maybe with the head of AIPAC and they say, this is going to cost you this much money, I don't know. I mean, as I've mentioned to you in the past, the Democratic Party is so heavily reliant on the AIPAC crowd for campaign contributions. Mm-hmm. So right now, I think, okay, so I go along with you on this. Obama makes, this is an unsentimental calculation he's made. But if that's all it is, it can then go the other way. See, I don't think that's all it is. I think this is what Obama wants to do. I think that the last thing he wants to do is have the war with Iran that George W. Bush rejected.
So leaving it at the status quo where George Bush left it is a pretty bad legacy, if you ask me. And of course,
it makes
perfect sense to make the deal. I mean, it's ridiculous to still have this kind of official enmity with Iran after all this time.
There is a real politic reason for it, from a hawkish point of view, which is that it looks like the most anti-American forces in the Middle East right now are the extreme Sunni Muslims, the Al Qaeda people and their followers in Syria, the people that the Saudis back, all those people, the people who pulled off that awful massacre in Nairobi. The hawks like to always talk about what they call the Shiite arc or Shiite, like this thing in the region that just threatened all American interests, which ran from Iran through, Syria, Hezbollah, that kind of thing. Right now, the threat really looks like the people backed by the Saudis and the people that the Israelis don't even care about, which is these various al-Qaeda-linked crazy people who like blowing up things for its own sake rather than having any kind of particular interest in, like, fighting for their country or anything like that. Those people are more scary right now. And if the United States settles its differences with Iran, Iran can help us deal with them. They've done that in the past. They don't like the Taliban any more than we do. And they helped us with the Taliban in the past. So it could be a real, actually in cold terms, it could also be a good idea. Cold strategic terms, even though I don't really know how to think that way. But,
Well, I was thinking I could probably make a fortune doing public relations for Israel right now because they're just blowing it, man. They keep blurting out things like Ehud Barak saying, "The world must rally behind General Sisi and the new coup d'etat dictatorship in Egypt." Like, hey, man, shut up. I don't even like Ehud Barak or agree with his prop-up dictatorship position at all, but just from an objective point of view, hush.
They seem incapable of not saying everything they think. You had people in the, ministers, one minister in the Israeli government said, well, actually, we're not for any particular side in Syria. We just want them all to kill each other off.
Right.
Well, we know that's what their position is.
Well, and then Michael Oren...
Who says things like that?
Well, Michael Oren, the Israeli ambassador to America, said that, basically, I'm paraphrasing him, yeah, we prefer Al-Qaeda to Hezbollah in Syria. That's what this is, ultimately.
Right.
And because Hezbollah and Syria's government are backed by Iran, that means we prefer whoever the jihadists are fighting them on the other side, which also means that's why America supports them, too. Our only real enemies, the guys that attacked the towers, we support them because they're opposing Israel's enemies and Hezbollah right now. And why do they even have access? Anyway, because the neocons and Ariel Sharon's office pushed us into war with Iraq 10 years ago and turned that entire civilization upside down and spread their Sunni base insurgency back to Syria. It had come in part from Syria to help them fight, and now it's gone home to roost.
Exactly right. You know, the Israelis don't care about Al Qaeda at all. I mean, look, no, we never went. Benjamin Netanyahu, who wasn't prime minister then, he was the leader of the opposition. But what he said in on 9/11 2001 was, "This is a great thing." He said it's a great day because now America and Israel, you know, have the same enemies. Well, from his point of view, it might have looked like that for a day. But the fact is, we're seeing now, and we've been seeing over the past few years, they don't give a damn about Al Qaeda, nihilists from Al Qaeda. They don't care. And also, every time anybody attacks the United States, they think it's good because it will eventually lead us to opposing all Muslims or something. But we're really not on the same side of this stuff. Iran and Hezbollah are not a threat to the United States. The threat are the people who blew up the World Trade Center. Can it be any more obvious? That was a gigantic hole in the ground for 10 years.
Right.
I mean, but that's not the way they see it. And, you know, that's why, you know, Joe Biden has his favorite line about there must be no daylight. I always like to quote him. He says it twice. He says there must be no daylight between Israeli and U.S. policies. Well, nice try, but it's a gigantic sun rising of daylight right now that shows that Israel's interests and Israel's security concerns are not the same as ours. Also, if the government of Israel really cared about its own people, it would realize that having Al Qaeda on its northern border, rather than Hafez Assad, who, for all his crimes, kept the peace with Israel for 20 years or 30 years, well, why are they on the wrong side of this? They don't even care about their own people, and I believe they don't. Because I actually, if you look at it logically and in terms of real live people, people with children, people like that, peace between the United States and Iran, a situation where the United States can talk to Iran and has good relations with Iran, are infinitely better for Israel than what they're proposing, which is what? That we ultimately have a war that erupts that entire region and can consume Israel completely? They're nuts.
Right. Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, the people of Israel, I know they're pretty much as helpless to control their government as we are to control ours. But, man, they ought to be doing everything they can to just shut Netanyahu up. His speech to the UN ought to be, thank you, America, for seeing what's good for me better than me. Because otherwise, like you're saying, and this could be the last chance that we have for a long time to normalize these relations. And think of it from the American national interest point of view. If Obama, and it's just too obvious, so I'm sorry to be a broken record on it, audience, but the Nixon goes to China thing. Nixon made it okay that he lost the Vietnam War because he undid domino number one in the domino theory, that if they all go communist, they'll all be under the sway of Red China. Well, he made friends with Red China, so it doesn't matter. And then, so he went ahead and lost Vietnam because he couldn't win anyway, so went ahead and lost it, but it was okay because he had made friends with Red China. Well, in this case, we can go ahead and make friends with Green Iran, and then we don't have to back Al-Qaeda against Hezbollah in Syria anymore, you know? It'll be great.
Exactly. It just makes sense. I think the thing we have to really worry about is, well, first of all, you know that even though we both say that it's common sense for Netanyahu to get up there and say, thank you, President Obama, this is a good opening for all of us, we know that we're going to enjoy it a lot more when he goes up and he has cartoons and pictures and talks about the Germans in 1942 and all this crazy stuff, because it's fun watching him in extremists, you know, just watching Netanyahu going down. And I'm sure that's what the speech is going to give. It's going to be a wacko hate speech, because that is pretty much the only kind he's capable of. I think the thing we really have to worry about is after the people who really, you know, who run Iran, the ones who have allowed the president to go ahead with this, who are backing him, his opening to the United States, we don't know how much time they're giving him. I mean, you know, if Iran keeps reaching out and the Israelis keep doing their stuff, and President Obama, let's say, just pulls back a little because he has to conciliate AIPAC or whatever, they can decide to just pull Rouhani back. This, an opening like this doesn't last forever. I mean, that China-U.S. moment in 1972 might not have lasted forever. It was seized.
Right.
So I think the APAC Netanyahu game right now could be to slow things down. I don't. To me, I don't think Netanyahu that Obama's going to go along with it. I think Obama also wants a fast deal. I mean,
well, he better. I mean, why even make the phone call? Why even go along with this at all if he doesn't really mean it at this point?
The phone call was really the sign, because we all knew this was going on in the back, you know, that this stuff was going on. But it was almost like, hey, and before you go out of town, I've got to give you something concrete. I'm going to pick up the phone. I mean, wouldn't you have loved to be in APAC headquarters when that happened? Oh, my God. I would say that was the worst moment they have ever lived through. Their president, their Democratic president, oh, my God. But, you know, never underestimate the mischief that they can do. But nonetheless, I'm really optimistic. If someone asked me, I said, if I had to put money on it right now, I'd say we're going to get a deal with them. There's going to be a U.S.-Iranian deal, and the world is going to be a much better place. It's still going to suck, but it's going to be a much better place.
Well, the possibilities right now are certainly better than they have been in a long time. And, of course, if they really wanted to exploit this thing, they could use the obvious nuclear deal that's already been laying on the table for a few years now. They could use that as just a method to really open the door to normalize relations completely and do the go-to-China moment, really make friends with them. And who needs enemies except arms dealers, you know?
No, I think that, you know, I think that that old deal that, I don't know, we basically walked away. Yeah, we walked away from. It's still good.
Yeah.
I think in this kind of situation, all you need is both sides having the will to make a deal. And we can see on the Iranian side they've got it, and it looks like the Obama has it too. And I don't see, you know, there are no reports at all. I think it's significant that there's an undercurrent in the administration itself of people against this. You know, it would be kind of troubling if you were reading the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense. This might be why it's significant that Chuck Hagel is there at the Defense Department. Because despite all the lies he had to tell about his positions on Israel, when in fact we all know what he really thinks about things, he's somebody who could I'm sure he's backing Obama. Kerry obviously is. He doesn't have to worry right now about Hillary Clinton rushing off to fundraisers and saying, "Oh, I'll help slow this down." So you know, it could be a very propitious moment. We always said it would happen in a president's second term. So, I mean, like, you know, why not do it? So, but, you know, one thing that might it's a little bit tricky in terms of knowing what the Republicans think, well, they're so busy right now trying to, shut down the government and then hopefully destroy America's economic standing in the world and make everybody more poor than they were before, that they really can't focus on silly things like this. They really have a job to do right now, and their job is, in my opinion, sedition and treason. And I don't even see any of these guys like Eric Cantor saying anything. I think they're distracted. It's like, where can I do the most evil? And they're thinking right now they could do more evil domestically.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, geez, you'd think that Eric Cantor could multitask of all people, but. So what do you think about the so-called peace process in the West Bank and all of that two-state, one-state bogusness? Kerry and Martin Indyk over there going to bring peace?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I don't see this. Look, the day that I see concrete evidence that Benjamin Netanyahu was willing to give up one square mile of land in the West Bank, I'll believe it. I mean, they won't even. No, you talked about the Nixon goes to China thing, and sometimes people say that about Netanyahu. Well, the difference is that slug Nixon really wanted to go to China. That slug Netanyahu really wants to keep every inch of the West Bank.
Yeah.
It's entirely different.
Right. By the way, you know what? That's two Nixon references. I got to mention, it's in the New York Times today about him and Kissinger conspiring with the government of Pakistan to massacre a million people in Bangladesh, which was East Pakistan at the time, today. And Kissinger and Nixon both mocking the deaths of a million civilians.
I'm halfway through that book. It's called Blood Telegram.
Oh,
it is the most amazing book. You know, I'm older than you, so obviously I was around and I remember that, you know, I remember the tilt to Pakistan. I had no idea that it was this bad. If you really want to see how America operates, this book is it. Yeah, and the good side of it, the flip of it is, there were amazing people at the State Department, including this guy named Blood. It's called Blood Telegram, but his name was Blood, who was the Consul General in East Pakistan, who publicly fought the administration on this, and the U.S. ambassador to India, whose name was Kenneth Keating, who wrote, they sent cables back home to Kissinger and Nixon, said, this is genocide. And Kissinger, that old bastard, I'm sorry, am I not allowed to say that?
Go right ahead, man.
Okay.
That's his middle name, it's okay.
Well, here he is. I'm so glad that he is alive and got a chance, as you know he did, to read that New York Times book review of this book yesterday. This is, I mean, it's somehow, you know, the Chile anniversary wasn't, you know, there wasn't enough pointing to the fact that he and Nixon were the guys who overthrew the Allende government. This story is. But this is, we're talking mass murder here. I mean, there were lots of murders in Chile, too. Nothing like this. We're talking genocide that was supported by Nixon and Kissinger. Everybody should read this book.
And I'm trying to remember there's a master list of American post-World War II interventions by William Blum or Blum at Third World Traveler. And I'm trying to remember if this one is on that list. It's such a long list of innocents murdered. It's incredible. Someone else was bringing up on my Facebook page about Kissinger again here, I believe, Sukarno and killing a million people in the...
Yeah.
One-sided civil war, if you want to call it that at all, you know, back in the 50s in Indonesia.
I actually, Henry Kissinger is really something. He really belongs there on the Hitler-Stalin list. You know, I think once you get responsible for more than a million dead, it's not that big a list. I mean, it's a big enough list, but Kissinger really is a mass murderer. And I really want him to live to be 100 because I'm hoping that in time he will just be recognized as the absolute monster of America, almost a monster without parallel in American history. And there have been a lot of them.
Yeah,
it's definitely just amazing.
Well, what's funny is he's writing op-eds saying, "Hey, stay out of Syria. This could be a mess." He's a reasonable one now.
Keep up with people like that.
All right. Hey, thanks, MJ. It's great to talk to you again.
Okay, Scott. Take care.
Hey, everybody. Read MJ Rosenberg at mjrosenberg.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at libertystickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at libertystickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at thebumpersticker.com. Libertystickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Rocky Mountain Miners at rockymountainminers.com. Ever wanted to destroy the Federal Reserve System? Now's your chance. New free market currencies are making our fake government money a thing of the past, and good riddance. If you want to mine new bitcoins and litecoins into circulation, you need a computer set up to crack the codes to the new coins. Get the prospector from rockymountainminers.com. It's ready to do the work right out of the box. Crack the equations, spend the money. Use promo code Scott Horton Show and save $100. Get all the info and get the prospector at Rocky Mountain Miners. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the Journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Now, you know they publish great articles at fff.org every day, but their best stuff goes in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online, and I got a new one coming out in September in there, U.S. Responsible for Somalia's Misery. Support FFF. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email Scott at scotthorton.org for more details. See you there.